I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, welcome back to the Talking Movies Pictures.
Where have you been?
Well, we were here last week.
And the week before that. If that's not true, then there's something in a grave error.
I think the space-time continuum is fucked.
Just in case that has happened to a couple of people.
And you've lost the last 20 or 30 episodes.
Lost, you know, since maybe, what was it, November, December. Let's just list some of the great guests that we've had since then.
We've had Sylvester Stallone.
The Michelin Man.
We've had the Michelin Star.
We got
just one.
Yes, this podcast has been given a Michelin star because we serve up such hot, tasty reviews.
So if you missed all these guests, I'm so sorry.
Oh, Christ.
But you can go back in the feed. They might turn up one day.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just choked.
As
you can see, our broadcasting style has only got better over the last few months.
I'm more professional now. Andy, you're the same. Which
the
was
same,
great.
If not better.
Which was, and if not better, then the same. I've not missed anything. We've been recording every single week since November. Don't worry about that. But just
which
in
is
case,
weird because we never did every single week. Before
no, we've
that.
Been we've actually been going more frequently since then. So we're just going to dial it back now because we're working so hard. We're going to be going back to fortnightly,
if that,
and with no guests. So,
Tim, what was that? Why after, because of this last run of great guests over the last 20 or 30?
We burned through them so much quickly.
There's none left.
There's none left. And you can tell that by the fact that we were actually interviewing fictional characters by the end. So,
oh God, so many.
Michelin Man, for example.
And the Michelin Star.
Yeah.
And Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
That is a song. And the fact that we stooped so low as to interview a piece of sort of, you know, different medium, that's bad.
That is bad. Well, what we've decided is to not have any more guests and to actually, you know, get into the nitty gritty of what the show is about, which is movies. So what we're going to do, rather than interview a guest about their movie, we're just going to go see a movie and then talk about it. Usually we ignore all these screening requests because we're like, why do we need to see the movie if we're talking to the person in the movie? They can tell us about the movie. Why do we need to waste an hour and a half watching a movie when we could waste 45 minutes talking to someone in a movie?
Please.
So now we're gonna put a bit more effort in now that we've run out of guests, done them all. So we're going to go to a screening, watch a movie, and we'll just review it.
That will be the format from now on, unless more actors are born. In which case, maybe.
I mean, I can see it happening. I don't want it to happen, but I can see it happening because, you know, that's just the environment we work in these days. They're just born.
Well, it's classist, isn't it now? Acting is classist now, is what they're saying. So if you only do it with money and being in a good class.
The problem with capitalism, the lower classes, the upper classes, they're getting smaller. It's all about the middle class, which means we have less actors.
And who's the teacher of the class? Movies.
John Malkovich. So
let's get on to Marvel news.
Of course, because I mean, there's been over the last few months there has been so much Marvel news and we've covered it obviously.
A lot of the Marvel news that I've been delivering since November has been so premonitory,
future
that it's like I've used it all when I went so far into the future that actually I've used up what you would have as news. And I went sort of 2 years into the future at one point, and it was like, that's so news. So now it's gone.
What are you saying to
me? I said it's gone, and actually I need to, Marvel were getting annoyed. I was delivering some exclusives that they were not happy with, and
so many exclusives.
So I've got to let it build up again. A couple of weeks might be enough time. So currently I won't be doing the Marvel news because you've had such good Marvel news since November.
But
rest assured,
I've been suckling on the teat of Marvel news every week for the past God knows how long. You're going to take that teat away from me. You're going to rip that raw nipple from my mouth and squirt all over the floor where no one's listening.
You're a big boy now. All right, I'm moving you on to Marvel powder.
I am a tiny boy.
I'm moving you on to the Marvel powder. I'm just weaning you off that. So in a couple of weeks, I'll just drip feed you the Marvel news.
Yes, please. Okay, fine. So no Marvel news. So have we got regular movie news or the other movies that come out there that aren't as good as Marvel?
Yeah, obviously. Marvel, movie news. Go.
Is there a theme tune, is there?
Yeah, didn't you hear it?
Ah.
Oh, did I talk over it? Okay, play the theme tune.
Sorry, Tim, I haven't played it yet. I haven't played it.
No, sorry. Okay, and action.
What does that mean?
That's like, sorry. That's what they do for when the movie starts recording.
And here's the movie news.
Movie news.
Okay, so Tim, do you know, have you been on your Cinema Blend Newswire this week?
I'm off the internet at the moment.
What?
Just a sort
how
of...
Are you wait, hang on. How are you... You're off the internet?
Yeah, I'm off it.
Sit on the internet. Everyone's off the internet. The internet is something you go through.
Okay, I'm out of it then. I'm away from it. It's a cancer. So what has happened?
You've got cancer.
No, the internet's a cancer, and it hurts us all in bad ways. What's the movie news, Andy?
That actually leads quite well into our movie news, because we're talking about Deadpool, who, as everyone knows, had cancer.
Yeah, that's good. Talk about Deadpool, please.
I mean, some say it's the cancer that gave him his powers.
It's the cancer that keeps on giving.
Do you know what isn't giving?
Receiving.
Okay, so let me tell you about the Deadpool news.
Oh, yeah.
For this news. So I went on an article today, and quite honestly, Tim, I was shocked.
Uh-oh.
Okay. I was shocked.
Am I sitting down?
Because I went on.
Yes.
Okay, so are you aware of a guy called Rob Liefeld?
Well, I think it's pronounced Liefeld, but no, I'm not.
Well, me neither, because he is not someone I know about. But do you know what? He is in mourning. Deadpool, this on Cinema Blend, this article title says Deadpool co-creator Rob Liefeld mourned the loss of Donald Glover. And I'm very confused by what this means, because Donald Glover, as we all know, is a person, and he's mourning him, which can only mean one thing.
He dead. And is that the full headline?
There's some weird letters after it. It says F double X and then the word adaptation.
Yeah.
It says Deadpool co-creator Rob Liefeld mourned the loss of Donald Glover's, and then the F, and then the double X.
I think adaptation. I think FXX adaptation is
That like futuristic visual effects or something?
No, I think it's the name that he's taken instead of Childish Gambino. So that's now that was his music moniker for a while.
Oh, so his music moniker is FXX
adaptation.
So he's mourning the loss of both the actor and the musician.
Well, the music's dead as well, because he is. So, and he produced both, as we know. He was Childish Gambino, adaptation, and Childish Gambino, and Donald Glover. So what does this say about all the music, and is this America still, if he said it?
Well, this is what's confusing me, to be honest with you, because I don't really understand what the Deadpool co-creator, what his relationship with Donald Glover is, why he's the one in mourning and no one else seems to be that bothered about his death.
Because of the if you look at the This Is America video, and we all have, and you know, I'm not sure that anyone's quite nailed down the interpretation of it yet, and maybe that's what we should be doing. There are references to Deadpool in it. And actually, I think that's what he's saying is, he was making Deadpool cool again. The music video was. And who's there to do that anymore if he's gone? And if you look, there is guns in it, and that's kind of what Deadpool has.
Do you remember the first time you heard FXX Adaptations mixtape?
This Is America?
It came out after This Is America.
What was it called?
It's called This Is Not America. It was set in Sweden.
Right, and it was just like a literal geographic song about listing all of the places that he's not in. And it was a game, wasn't it, if I remember rightly? It was a sort of...
What's the thing? The thing about Childish Gambino is he's all about like metaphor and things like that. But as soon as he took on the FXX Adaptation moniker, he just became very literal.
Yeah, I think if memory serves, it was a sort of AI augmented reality game, which was like, this is not this country, this is not another country. And then you had to guess, based on the clues given in the video, what it was. And there was meatballs around and there was ABBA. And you had to say, where's this? And he's right, it's not America.
It's Sweden.
It was actually, yeah. I mean, I cracked it.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it's very hard to kind of get the visuals from a song sometimes. And he had to literally just throw out references of things.
Let's talk about the This Is America video and the interpretations therein. What do you take away from that? Is it talking about gun violence or is it about the moon landing?
I don't know. I can't say. You know what? Why do it? Like, in Hollywood these days, you've got to come down on one side of the fence. You've got to go, yes, I'm for it. No, I'm not for it. I don't know. I'm on the fence. Don't force me to answer.
So my interpretation of This Is America video is that he is... Oh, he's a provocateur now, I think, is RFXX. And he's trying to say, this is where we are and that this is the state of the country. And what that means is... there's too many cars. And if you look, I think there are cars in the video. And he's saying, the guns don't kill people. Cars. Yeah?
Do you know what I'm going to do, Tim?
Yep.
I'm still confused by this headline. I'm going to Google FXX adaptation.
Yes.
It's always come up with the same article.
It is Donald Glover.
It's come up with the same article. Oh, no, here's one from the Independent. It says, Deadpool creator mourns the loss of Donald Glover's animated TVs. Oh, no, I've got this wrong.
Okay.
I've got this wrong.
Hasn't happened yet. Interested. What explain?
So it's not Donald Glover that's been murdered. It's a TV series that he's working on that's been murdered. I'd scripted the end of this segment. I was going to say Donald Glover dead at 34, but he's not. He's alive and well. So that's really fucked this up.
Fuck that script up that you wrote.
Do you know what else he did in that video? He smoked a weed.
Well, fucking, what's he expect? That's so illegal. And like, that's his brain on drugs. That video. What a fucking whack job.
So, Tim, now that we've got the news out of the way, we can get to the real meat of this episode. And as regular listeners will know, there's an absolute point to listening to this podcast, and that is to learn about movies, but not only watching movies.
Listening to them.
This podcast is important for those aspiring movie creators, which as I believe they're called, creators of movies.
And how do we tell them that? To how?
So one of the, we've done this a couple of times on the podcast before, and it's a segment that we like to do called Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator.
Play the theme tune.
And basically,
please play the theme tune.
And that's the theme tune. And basically, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator Pitch is a segment we like to do which helps aspiring movie makers learn how to get the ideas out of their head. Because, you know, Tim, when you have an idea, you know where it comes from. It comes from your head. And to pull it out there, you don't want to... Well, it goes from the heart up into the head.
And then
you... Where next? Where next?
Yeah. Where next? The mouth and the screams.
Well, this is the grey area.
Film the grey,
right?
But they pitch that.
Nope. So what you've got to do, Andy, is you've
pitch
got
the film the grey. Liam Neeson plus wolves equals movie. Done. That's the sort of.
I mean, don't ask me to do something if they're
just fucking. Okay, fair point.
So this segment is basically where me, Andy, and you, listener, and Tim.
Listener. Sorry, what?
I confused myself. This is the segment where me, Andy, and you, Tim,
listener,
and the royal you, Tim, the listener, learns how to pitch their movie ideas
Andy.
To the man in the elevator. I'm looking at the man in the elevator.
Asking him to make a deal.
And this is how we play the game. One of us provides
the other one
with a series of words. And using those words, that's the movie title. And the other person has to pitch that movie based on that title to the man in the elevator, who then decides whether you get your movie made.
And if you don't get the movie made and he doesn't like it, he drops you down the elevator shaft for some reason. And he has, and he has
exactly. And to be honest, if he didn't drop you down the elevator shaft, you should just fucking throw yourself down there because you're worthless. You've got nothing, and that's why you need to learn
and
how to pitch a movie. So
it turns
worthless.
Out he is the man who's in charge.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So who's Charlie?
So I think how about I'll be Charlie in this instance?
That takes the pressure off. So let me just get the bowl from underneath the studio table. It's a bowl of what? Ah, there we go. Plunk that on there. And okay, which bowl would you like the words for me to take the papers of words from?
The top one, please.
And just rustle in the paper. And the paper's white, which is the same as Charlie the drug. And the first word is blizzard.
Which is the same color as Charlie the drug. And Charlie the boy.
He is white, yeah. And which bowl next?
The one that is kept in the cupboard under the stairs.
Just give me 1 second. Okay. All right. I'll just rustle in the bowl. Papers, white paper, Charlie. Cocaine. And this word is... monstrous.
Blizzard.
I should say there is a silent colon after the word blizzard.
I was going to say, is that grammatically okay? Blizzard colon
monstrous, and then the last monstrous. Word. Where do you want that from? And and I had a ball behind me the whole time behind my back. Do you want this one? Okay. What's behind your ear?
That is
it's a bowl of words. Do you want it to be from that?
No, I want the bowl of words behind your ear.
I didn't think I had one.
Well, why didn't you check?
Oh, there's a bowl of words behind my ear, and that's so many words. That's
and
magic.
That's magic.
So, blizzard, silent colon, monstrous. And I was going to word out this one. Rat.
Blizzard, monstrous rat.
Yeah.
That sounds like a phenomenal
blizzard,
movie.
Blizzard, colon, monstrous rat. So, get in the elevator. Hi, Charlie. What movie have you got?
I'm in the elevator. I'm going to pitch a movie that I've got called Blizzard, colon, monstrous rat.
You go on.
All right, so this movie is about the 29th member of the So Solid crew. I can't remember 29. How many members there were, but if there was only... if there are only 24 in the familiar incantation... then that's still absolutely fine.
There's an incantation.
This is the 29.
What is the incantation?
And there's another. I don't know. I haven't heard any of their songs, but I presume they're incantations. Please. Let me pitch my movie. This is about Blizzard, the 29th member of the So Solid crew. And it is it's one of those lad movies, you know, one of those lad movies. And Blizzard is out there and he's trying to hit on all these girls. And all these girls are like, oi, Blizzard, you are monstrous rat.
Okay, it's an encounter one.
Yeah. And he's going out there, he's dating all these women, and he's like, they're like, you are a monstrous rat. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm just, you know, being myself. And they're like, yeah, and yourself is a monstrous rat. And he's like, what are you talking about? And he's just grown up, like, over the years, thinking he was all that and all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of like these ladies that are calling him this monstrous rat. And he's like, what does that mean? what does that mean? Basically, he kind of goes home after a date one night where they call him a monstrous rat. And this is like the 17th time that it's happened. And that's less than the number of So Solid crew members. They all say, you are a monstrous rat. And he's like, well, if everyone's saying it, it must mean something. And like he goes home and he looks in the mirror and he realizes he's a giant rodent.
Okay. And he is a rat.
And he is a rat. And he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I get it now. Like, all this time I've been, you know, like kind of going around with all these women and like going, hey, they call me a monstrous rat. But like, you know, I've got a good heart and all that. And then he goes home. And he finds out that it's not about the heart.
It's about the fact that
he is a monstrous rat. And these girls don't want to date him because it's bestiality.
I'm not even sure they're even concerned about getting to the sex part. I think that just seeing a giant rat in a restaurant, I mean, you take someone to your favourite restaurant and that person is a rat, all of a sudden you've got a health and safety situation on your hands.
It wasn't all of a sudden, he was always a rat.
Sort of catfished them or ratfished them.
Well, the thing is, that's really not. Andy, this is all within the first 2 minutes. We're not getting to it.
Okay, he's put a picture on Tinder of a human face. He turns up and he's a rat, and obviously he's ratfished them. Okay.
I mean that's not going in the movie.
That's just for me and you, okay?
And what
in this elevator?
All right, let's save at that. Right, give me a minute. Should we hold hands? All right, say it again. Yeah.
Would you say that he's rat fishing them?
And this whole section takes part
montage,
in the first 2 minutes. Okay, so like this isn't what the movie's about. It's an opening montage, and so basically the inciting incident is that he finds out he's a monstrous rat, and so he goes home and he's just like, oh my god, who am I? Oh, who am I? What am I thinking with my life?
Australian,
and he goes around to his parents and he's like, mum and dad, why? Did you tell me I was a little boy?
Logistical question.
And
has he changed into a rat, or did he?
Yeah,
has he
exactly.
always been a rat, and he just somehow didn't realize?
Well, this is the thing, because like that kind of says to you that he's always been a rat, and his parents have been lying to him, and it's all about like the relationship between this guy and his parents. But that's actually not the case, because they go, son, this is the first we're hearing about it. Like last time we saw you were a normal bloke. Something's happened and we don't know what it is.
So
we never find out what
it is. Parents house and he says, mum, dad, I've got something to tell you. And their reaction is, whoa, something's happened there. Because he is a giant monstrous rat.
Exactly, and they're like, he's going in there like to have it out with them. Like, why didn't you tell me I was a monstrous rat? You've been pretending I was a boy this whole time. They're like, this is the first
monstrous rat.
I'll
stop you there, Blizzard.
I knew the moment
you walked in, because you are a monstrous rat.
And so he's like, oh no, like what's happened? And we never find out because we don't have the budget for it. But when he leaves, he's like, oh no,
this is
going
still,
on? So he's like, he
decides
to kind of
go
back and make amends with, and he goes outside and he like looks in a puddle at his reflection. He's like, oh, what's going on? He realizes that people haven't been lying to him his whole life. He's still him. This horrendous thing has happened to him, but it's still him with his personality. He's still the 29th member of the Soul
Solid
crew.
Yeah?
He's still got that going for him. He's still beautiful on the inside. And so he's like, I'm going to go back to these girls.
Yeah,
I'm going to woo them with my personality, you know. He goes back to this he goes around the house to this girl that he went on a date with the previous time. And she opens the door and he goes, Sophie.
You get used to it pretty quickly, I imagine.
Well, no, because she's seen him as a monstrous rat.
Fuck.
He goes back to Sophie, who called him a monstrous rat the night before. God. And she answers the door and she fucking screams her shit off.
And she's like,
oh my god, you're a monstrous rat. And he's like, I know, you told me that last night. And she's like, no,
hang on,
no, you are now a literal monstrous rat. Last night you were just flirting with other girls, and that's why I called you a monstrous rat. And he's like, yeah, exactly. And he's like, well, something's happened here. Am I a monstrous rat?
Can I ask and maybe preempt something?
And we never find out.
Maybe you're saving
what
him
it is.
I don't know. Does he at any point start to train
for
monstrous turtles? So this is a split.
You're right. I am saving that for the sequel. This is okay. This is an origin story.
It's Blizzard. It's Blizzard, yeah? Yeah.
And she's just like, exactly. And she's like, he's talking to her and he's like, no. Let me explain. I was a monstrous rat last night, but now I'm actually a monstrous rat. We never find out how it happens.
This
is terrifying. She goes to slam the door in his face, but he kind of like puts his hand in the way to stop it. Door kind of shuts on his hand and he's like, ah, shit. And he kind of pulls his hand out and he's like, there's loads of splinters in his hand. And that's how Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And was like, that's a noun.
And this is what I'm thinking. Like, it's a low budget, rated R origin story for Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Can it be found footage? Charlie and the Gray
Glass Elevator. If we can find any, sure.
So we're in the elevator. We get to the top floor in the elevator because that's how long you've got to pitch it. This is a very tall building.
Yeah, yeah.
Pitch the time it takes to get up and work out how it works.
Uh huh.
Get to the top. Open the doors, and I say, "Well, Andy, Mr. Price, your film Blizzard Colon Monstrous Rat - A Splinter Story seems like you're infringing on the copyright of a franchise that Michael Bay has worked very hard to make brilliant." Whoa, hold on. Sorry, are you Charlie or are you Michael?
Well, no, he's producing it. He's in the shadows of the
elevator. Sorry.
Let's
let Michael have a... I'm sorry. Michael?
Michael hasn't said anything yet. Oh, you've got to ask him a direct question. Yep.
Michael, are you planning to produce any... origin
sorry, that was me. I was like, I
for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise. And can this be one? Okay.
Yes.
Charlie?
Yes.
Well, sorry, he's just saying he'll do it if I agree to make the film.
Well, I mean, that's it.
Who's Charlie here?
Say, not a problem.
Yeah, so I'm Big Bollocks studio head.
I am.
Whoa, sorry. Is this dissent from Charlie?
Well, I mean, if you don't want to make
who's
a movie,
the, who's the Charlie?
Michael Bay, then you're fucking moron.
Yeah, you're fucking Charlie. Get out of this elevator. Get in that room. Get right
Charlie.
In. It's a deal. Charlie and the Gray Glass Elevator pitch to and that was Charlie. Stick
Bye,
around.
Charlie.
Bye, Charlie. Oh, there he goes. Great ass. So stick around for the review movie of the week, which will be reviewed by me after what's next, which is nothing. Don't touch the dial.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we're back. Tim, you went to the theatre this week, didn't you? I couldn't go, obviously, because I had to have a hysterectomy. But...
Well, you say you had to. It was elective, but okay.
Well, was it? So you toddled off to the cinema, and you went to see what is now our movie of the week, because we only saw one this week, and I wasn't there. So you're going to have to review it for the listeners. So, Tim, can we start by, tell me about the atmosphere in the theatre.
Did the atmosphere you any other critics in there? Aware of 4D cinema?
Semi-aware.
Okay, which half of you is aware, or how? Which half of what it is are you aware of?
I'm semi-aware of cinema. Fully aware of 4D.
Outside of cinema, you're fully aware of 4D.
Absolutely. It's everywhere. Right. Real life is
just
4D.
And just repeat back to me, just explain to me what it is so I can clarify.
What, 4D? Right.
In cinema.
Oh, what, cinema?
No, 4D cinema.
Okay. So 4D cinema is, you can see. That's one dimension. You can hear. That's the second dimension. You can feel, that's the third dimension, and you can smell, that's the fourth dimension.
You're close. Smell is two of the dimensions.
Sure.
And you can't touch anything, because that sort of ruins it.
So it's like, in many ways, it's like a ladies dancing club.
Yeah, no touching.
And you can smell everything.
It's very... Oh, so strong the smell. Have you ever been to one of those children's theme clubs, theme parks, where, for example, you might go and watch a live pre-recorded film of, say, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and in said film, a big dog will be sneezing at you, the audience, because actually it's called Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, and the dog sneezes and a bit of water just pisses out of the seat in front of you. So it's like you're really being sneezed on by a real big dog and you're tiny.
No.
So that's what this film is, and it's in four dimensions. It's not traditional in that. So you asked about the atmosphere, Andy, and basically they make it really stink up in the auditorium. They put you in sort of roller coaster seats, but it really stinks.
What does it stink of?
Well, it depends on the scene. Some of it was very scary, so piss. And also, there is actually weirdly a dog in this that sneezes at the audience.
Right, but, okay, so this is a horror film.
Yes, but I should clarify that the dog that sneezes in this film is normal size, and you as an audience member are normal size. So there's really no reason you should feel it on your face, but I did.
So what? So is it even 4D?
Oh, it was more. It was too much dog sneezing. It happened five times. Basically, it's a horror dog film.
Horror dog. 4D horror. And this is a new genre, as I understand.
Yes.
How many films have there been in this genre? Is this a genre-making film?
I think it might be the first of its kind. The thing is, I really think that it feels like they're building the movie just based on the idea of a dog sneezing at the audience and wanting to make it.
And what's so terrifying about that?
Just the vulnerability that you have in front of a dog. And that it's sort of not even bothering to cover its mouth, or that it's ill, actually. And maybe it's giving you something, like, you know, worms.
And so the sneeze is the equivalent of, like, the jump scare?
Yes, and there is a musical cue every time they sneeze.
So you can see it coming?
No, it just ups the scare. It just ups the jump, and it really, you know, it makes you sneeze almost. Like yawning.
Is it like if you saw a dog yawn on screen, that would make you yawn? If the dog sneezes, then you automatically sneeze. And then obviously there's all these germs going around in the theater and everyone gets ill. And that's what's really horrible about this horror and that's full film.
And that's another dimension. It's the illness that you get from the film stays with you afterwards
forever.
Well, maybe at least until the sequel comes out.
Oh, sure, and that's the cure, and that's how you get cured.
That's the cure. Because the cure is airborne.
Yeah, they just inject medicine out into the theatre. So tell me about this cast. What have we got? So, are the dogs the lead actors, or are they incidental characters?
Well, they are on leads. So you've got the dog from The Artist.
Yeah, people say it
should
have,
we've discussed this. People say it should have won an Oscar.
The problem with that dog, I can see why he's doing a horror movie at this stage, because as soon as you get typecast, it's almost like the only way out of that situation is to do a genre flick, you know?
Yeah, and we can hear it this time as well.
Do you worry that the dog is basically living out the story of The Artist, where he obviously was silent during The Artist because it was a silent movie, and the one line went to the human actor? Is this him kind of doing the same story as the actor, as the main guy from The Artist, now doing this film, going, hey guys, look, I can speak, like, I don't need to be typecast anymore?
So you are right, Jean Dujardin is in the film, and it's, you know, it's maybe the only film he's done since The Artist apart from Monuments Men and probably something else shit. And yeah, he doesn't speak, but the dogs, you know, they've got a lot to say, but not in English, if you remember from, you know, how they are. They're dogs, so it's just nothing.
So the dog doesn't speak in this?
Doesn't speak English, Andy, but it does make noises with its mouth, you know, sneezing.
It barks.
Sneeze barks. So Jean Dujardin is kind of the main guy who he's... I mean, I think they're playing off the idea that we only heard him speak a little bit in The Artist. It was that one line. Now they're going, oh, let's make him silent for a full film at last.
To really kind of progress him beyond the work.
Well, shut him up, you know, for a change. And he's kind of the hapless idiot that bumbles into the trap of the doghouse. It's sort of a house of, you know, I mean, not wax, but it is a kind of house of horrors.
Okay. Does it melt?
A sort of torture house. No. And that's, you know, in that way alone, really, yeah, it's nothing like wax. It's in a car with his girlfriend, and they break down, and she's kind of having a go at him at the beginning for not being communicative enough in their relationship, and that is because he doesn't speak, and you know, he can speak, he just chooses not to, and they break down, and you see a little flash of fur across the windscreen, and you wonder, oh, did the dog bite the tire? And
can I just stop you there, please? So you say, like, a flash of light goes across the windscreen.
Dog fur. Yeah.
That, to me, sounds like the first jump scare of the movie.
Okay, so, I mean, yes, there is a flash of fur and there is a sneeze on the windscreen, which causes him to swerve, crash. He sees that he's got a flat tire.
And could you feel the flat tire in your seats?
So the front left corner of your seat just kind of sinks by about a centimeter. And I didn't notice. I was told this afterwards.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm aware, no one else noticed in the cinema. But, you know, I did have a list of all the things I was given. So, for example, you see, you know, everything the character sees.
So this is shot entirely in POV of the main
No,
character.
Just that bit, though.
Just that bit. Okay.
It's like you're in the car and you see something and it's like, oh, and he does. So it's like you're there.
So they're switching between camera angles here, which is very interesting because you really don't see that enough in movies. So what you're saying is this isn't...
Too many single tracking shots you get these days.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sick of this Birdman Renaissance shit.
Yeah. So you're saying this movie wasn't in one shot?
So many shots,
oh,
Andy.
Do you know what, Tim? I'm refreshed, actually. I'm actually refreshed.
Yes. It is. It's refreshing for me.
I feel like...
Go, oh, he's what?
Oh, 30 degrees outside, and I've just jumped into a swimming pool because I'm refreshed.
Of ice cream.
I feel
how I was,
like I've just drank a carton of coconut water because you know what, Tim? That's actually more refreshing than water.
The water, yeah.
And I feel like I've drank all the coconut water in the world.
Oh.
I'm refreshed.
Oh, okay, it's good. Okay, it's not like you're hurting.
Any Dutch angles?
Yeah, actually, when he crouches down by the car and he looks at the tire that's flat, it's they've dutched it right up so hard, and it's almost double dutch. It's so much over to the side. Anyway, so he breaks down, goes up to change the tire. I mean, they have crashed, and it is, you know, bad because they crash right into a sort of person.
Ah, tell me about this person. Who's this person played by?
An unknown, but it is a stranger, and they knock him with the car. He gets out to change the tire, goes, probably shouldn't have killed this guy, goes to hop back in the car to tell his girlfriend, look, love, I've rightful killed someone.
And who's his girlfriend played by?
Anna Kendrick.
Sure.
And so he pops his, gets back in the car just to deliver the bad news. Here, darling, I've full on done a murder. But when he gets back in.
No. He looks in the passenger seat. I think I know where this is going. I don't. No, she doesn't, does she? Does she?
And who should be there? But not Anna Kendrick, but what do you think it might be?
Christine Hendricks.
from Mad Men?
Yeah.
No, it is actually a dog.
Well, that's so better than what I thought would happen. I thought he'd open the car door and Anna Kendrick...
And it was Jimi Hendrix.
No, I thought he was going to open the door and it'd be Anna Kendrick there playing the Cup song. And I thought that might ruin the tone of this horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, it would have done. And thank God it didn't happen. It was just a fucking dog. Anyway, he's talking to the dog and it doesn't say anything. It just kind of barks. And then you get, weirdly, and I don't know if this has been done in films before, and you're the expert here, Andy, and so am I, but there is a sort of dog's eye point of view shot, which is the dog from the artist looking at Jean Dujardin.
See, that's interesting, isn't it? Because presumably they'd have to work in the 4D effects there as well, because as soon as the movie puts you in POV of the dog, then you have to, they have to do something that makes you feel like a dog at that point. So can you explain what they do in the 4D scenario to make you feel like the dog?
Yes. So essentially, the ceiling opens up, and if you remember from school, PVA glue is a sort of thick, creamy white substance. That just pours
forbidden
down.
Yogurt, that's what I called it.
Yeah, the forbidden yogurt just kind of pours down in vats from the ceiling. And then people just, I mean, there's no machines for this, but people just kind of walk around with big bags of hair and fans, hand fans, and they just release the hair into the audience and you just get coated in it. So it's like, it was, I felt like a dog, and that was the purpose of it. And
did the seats do anything maybe to force you onto all fours?
You know what they did is they all tipped back. And the ushers came in and started rubbing our bellies.
Oh, that's good, because obviously what I said is the obvious thing, and what they've done is gone, no, we really, because they're going to be thinking, they're going to be like, what next? What are they going to do next to make them feel like a dog?
Yeah.
And what they did was they completely just...
It's surprising, yet satisfying at the same time.
So the point here, Tim, is that when they do this and they make you feel like a dog in 4D, was so that when they're showing you this POV shot, you feel like you are a dog. But presumably, once when they tip you back, you're no longer looking at the movie screen.
No, well, the problem is, Andy, there's only one point in the movie when they do a dog POV shot, and it is about 3 seconds long, and it's that shot, and it doesn't do it again. So you are left with the rest of the movie covered in glue and dog hair. And it was dog hair, I assured us of the veracity.
And also, did the seats not go back to normal? So you're watching the rest of the movie on your back?
Well, luckily they shut the ceiling and they started projecting the film there.
It sounds like an expensive screening, Tim. How can this movie possibly hope to make its money back?
You know what? I don't know that they're necessarily going to be doing the same for every single screening of this film. Maybe it was just for the critics.
See, that's not very good, is it? Because then if we're reviewing it based on what's happened here and going, oh, it's really good because they've got this 4D experience, and then people go and watch and they go, well, this doesn't make sense. They've shown me a shot from the POV of a dog. I don't feel like a dog because they haven't made me feel like one. What's going on? These guys said this was their movie of the week. So I kind of feel like we've been had.
And how would you...
Because they're going to make us look bad.
You're going to be looking at that film in the cinema. You're not going to be covered in glue or hair. You're not going to be on the back getting your tummy... Sorry to break it to you, listeners. You will not be on your back and your tummy will not be being rubbed by an usher. And you're going to be looking at a screen which, you know, might be mostly... They might have put a filter on so it's mostly blues and yellows, which is how dogs see. But you're going to be thinking, well, how can this possibly be a dog's point of view if I'm looking at it and I'm not a dog?
Mm.
And it will be thinking, who's even looking at Jean Dujardin? Because I know there's a dog there, but that's not me.
It's not me either.
Exactly. And who is it? And you're thinking, oh, there's another person in the car now. that he's looking at, because he's looking right down the barrel of the lens.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Anyway, we'll move on from this scene, because this is obviously just literally the first scene of the film. So luckily I knew that it was a dog, and I was suddenly the artist dog in the film, playing a different character, of course, as he was talking. And you see another dog behind Jean Dujardin reach in through the window with a handful, pawful, of chloroform, knock him out, and then they get him off to the doghouse.
Mm.
And that dog that chloroforms him is, of course, played by Scooby-Doo.
How's he looking?
He's still CGI, unfortunately. He hasn't made it live action yet.
Oh, that's a shame. So, Tim, I want to hear about the second jump scare.
So he wakes, Jean Dujardin, he wakes up, he's been through some torture, they start doing shit, and he's like, "What is just happening to me?" But he is French and he doesn't speak, so it sounds different. It's kind of like they play a bit of a trick on him, and they say, "Oh, I bet you're dog tired now," and there's a lot of dog puns.
Give me another one.
Well, you know, there's loads. I mean, face like a bulldog chewing a wasp. So the second jump scare comes on, he thinks that he's escaped, but actually orchestrated it so that he feels like he's been unleashed. The dogs orchestrated it. Jean Dujardin thinks he's escaped the dogs, but actually they're like, we'll let him think he's escaped so that when he, you know, fails, it's all the more delicious and yum.
So how many dogs are in this film, in the main cast?
Honestly, Andy, there was not a good time for me to count them all, but if you can think of every single, it's kind of like the Ocean's 13 of dogs. And that's not to say that there's 13 of them, but it is to say that every single one of them is, you know, famous in some way.
Dog from Richie Rich.
Yeah.
And presumably that dog's CGI in this as well.
Why? Because it's dead?
Yeah.
No, they've done a kind of Weekend at Bernie's thing with with the dog. I say that in the sense that they're Weekend at Bernie's-ing the audience, because we're not supposed to realize it's dead. Or are we?
We're going. So they got sunglasses on it, little suit, Scooby, and the dog from The Artist propping him up.
Yeah, he's never without a companion. He's never stood like moving around without a dog right next to him. And any of his lines that are spoken sound exactly like the voice of the dog next to him.
So is Scooby the only one that can talk in this film?
Well, yes, and the dog from Richie Rich, because Scooby does his voice, and I'm not sure if that's supposed to happen or, you know, just some ad libs on the part of Scoob. He's obviously a great improviser, as we know.
Oh, I mean, like, I'm not sure if all the listeners know about his background in the UCB, but oh my god, his Harolds were just.
You hear about the UCB four, Matt Besser, Amy Poehler, Ian Walsh, Matt. No, fucking the other ones. The thing is, they had a dog, and he was not part of the four because he is not human.
I thought we'd moved on.
Yeah. You know what? Me too. I thought we'd moved on from...
Like, by that point in time, I just thought we'd moved on.
You think that, you know, he'd be recognised as a contributing member of the UCB, and the UCB 5 is what they should be called, and, you know, suddenly, you know, he's not getting calls from them anymore. He's not even got a guest starring role in Parks and Rec, and yet... He put as much work into those fucking theatres as anyone else.
Second jump scare.
As I said, he thinks he's escaped and he's got some, you know, bits of thing stuck through him, like a ring through the hand. And he's got obviously a spiked collar on, but it's spiked inwards. Ouch. And he's found a room with a phone, and it's just a phone on its own on a little plinth in the middle of the room, and it's set up by them. But you think, oh, fortune favours the bold. Yes, he did shave his head for the role. And he comes...
See, Tim, can I just stop you there?
Yes, please.
Do you know what really annoys me about modern Hollywood?
I already do, but please tell the listeners.
Well, I don't understand, right, that... They're getting this actor who has a beautiful set of hair.
Known for his hairs.
I don't like that they are forcing him to shave his head. When there are so many actors out there that already have no hair. And that's a choice.
Just off the top of your head, name five.
It's Michael Rooker, Bruce Willis, Jeffrey Tambor, Michael Chiklis. And
Dean Norris is taking roles away from legitimately bold or born bold actors.
And just off the top of your head, name three born bold actors.
Sinead O'Connor.
Actor, is she?
Sure.
Yep.
The kid with the spoon in The Matrix.
Yep, born bold.
And the precogs in Minority Report.
And the other options you could have had were, of course, Dean Norris, Bruce Willis, Jeffrey Tambor.
The Boss Baby.
The Boss Baby. And, of course, Alec Baldwin.
Billy Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin. Eric Baldwin.
Ginger Baldwin.
Scary Baldwin.
And Dean Norris.
So he's in the room and he sees a bloody phone and he goes, time to call the police. He reaches forward to pick up the receiver, ready to dial. And the number's, of course, the 911, because this is set in America. Reaches his finger down to where the 9 should be. And at the last second, he suddenly realizes, Andy, it is not a phone.
Uh-oh.
It's fat. A dog.
Mm-hmm.
And what he picked up was another smaller dog as the receiver, and he goes to press a dog, and it is just a dog.
And that's where you jump, because you're like, I expected that to be a phone.
Well, the dog that he picks up is obviously right next to his face.
Yeah.
And instantly sneezes.
Oh, no.
Into his ear, a sort of phantom wet willy, if you will. Yeah. You know, no finger involved. And what you get in the theatre is you get an usher running up to you and just spitting in your ear.
We don't have much time, so what I'm going to ask you for the final, just give us three final jump scares, because if we don't tell them what the jump scares are, then they're not going to want to see it. So we can't let them go, well, we don't know if we go see this movie now, because we only know about two of the jump scares. The other three might be shit.
Jump scare number three is they kind of start to organise a ransom situation where they're saying, hey, listen, we'll maybe let you out, but we need something in return. And so they get him to record a video for, that's right, Anna Kendrick, because it turns out that she just ran away, and that's why there wasn't a dog. There was a dog there instead. So she's doing a Skype call with Anna Kendrick and Jean Dujardin. He says, money is what they want. And so he says, this is the amount of money, and I won't tell you how much it is. I don't want to spoil the film. He'll say, that's all the money that they want. And she'll say, okay, I've organised it with the police. And as a little bit of fun, Andy, the police that they actually interact with are police dogs. They send a briefcase, put it outside this giant sort of abandoned asylum, because isn't that scary?
Oh, is that one of the jump scares?
No, but get ready. Yes, it is. So the asylum jump scare is you see the word asylum on the screen, they kind of pan up and it's sort of over the rotten, dilapidated gates of the building. And then an usher will run up and just scream the word asylum in your ear.
Oh, my goodness. And obviously, let's be clear, when it's out in theatres, you're not going to get that experience.
Yeah. So it's an asylum, and the police dogs sort of nudge with their nose, and isn't that cute? Nudge a briefcase along the floor to the front, so cute, front door of the asylum, grabs it and pulls it inside, because he kind of has thumbs in a way. And he pulls it inside, and all the dogs are gathered around in a room next to Jean Dujardin, tied up in a dog lead with a spiked collar on the inside.
So cute.
So cute. The combination on the briefcase, three zeros, it's really easy. They do the combination, they open the briefcase, and they expect to see a lot of money.
Wedge. Cheese.
Bucks. But instead of money, it is a dog. It's a police dog that was in the briefcase.
Did you jump?
Well, the dog jumps out, and he's got a mace, which he does use on, you know, Scooby-Doo and the gang. And the gang in this case is not Fred, Daphne, Velma, and...
So it's dog-on-dog violence?
It is, actually. Just to clarify, the dog, in this case, the police dog, is played by Dean Norris.
You know what makes me sick is when bold men come along thinking they can play dogs. Because there's plenty of dog actors out there we've seen in this whole film. And what they've done is they've given a bold actor a dog's job.
Yeah. Well, he shoots the mace, and I should clarify just quickly, he shoots the mace at all the dogs, and that is when you get a POV shot of Jean Dujardin, who accidentally gets mace in his eyes, and at that point in the theatre, an usher will run up and mace you in the eyes.
That's so clever.
Yeah, because I mean, what they've done is if you want to kind of really recreate something that a character is feeling, you can just literally do the exact same thing to them.
That's so clever.
Because what's funny is I know that, you know, on the set, they did not use real names because they're
real life is more real than a movie, which has never been done before. That's remarkable.
Isn't that unprecedented that real life should be more real? Then you got the end chase scene. I just say the fifth scare. And, you know, listeners, if you don't want the film ruined, then don't watch it. Don't watch it because you get to the end and the ending will ruin it for you. So basically, he does escape with the help of the police dog. And then he's like, oh, hey, you should be a police dog or man, whatever. And he's like, no, please, I'm happy with my bakery. That's his job. Basically, you know, the kind of film finishes and he was not in the place and he gets freed, ends up back at home with Anna Kendrick, and their home is the bakery. They live upstairs from the bakery. Now you think, oh, that's happy ending, end of the film, denouement.
Do you just say demi-mort?
Denouement, which is French for ending. And so basically, film ends, you think, and then the door opens. Who should walk in but demi-mort? And she has a box. She says, hey, I ordered these muffins from you, you know, the other day, and I picked them up and they're not what I was expecting.
Don't they know who she is?
Oh, she's playing the character of Anna Kendrick, weirdly.
Do you know what really bugs me, Tim? Do you know what really bugs me? Is that there's plenty of actresses out there that can play Anna Kendrick.
Even in this film.
And what they've done here, in this film, there's an actress that could play Anna Kendricks. And what they've done is they've given it to Demi Moore as if Demi Moore doesn't get enough roles, that she has to take roles from Anna Kendrick. It's disgusting.
Honestly, Andy, you can't move for Demi Moore films these days. So she says, hi, my name's Anna Kendrick. You might have seen me in Pitch Perfect and others. And then Anna Kendrick's an actor playing a different character of a normal person. She's so professional. She's just like, yeah, I love your films. You know, not so much Pitch Perfect too. So she comes in with the muffins. She says, I ordered these yesterday and they're not exactly what I was expecting. Pops them on the counter and says, can you do them again? I'll come back tomorrow to pick them up. And I do expect them to be proper muffins and not this shite that you're giving me. Leaves. Anna Kendrick, the actress, not the character, then says, okay, husband, I'll just go and get the oven prepared to make some more muffins. Why don't you open that box and just see what was wrong with them that we don't make the same mistake.
I think I know where this is going, Tim.
And he opens the box and it turns out that he was a dog the whole time.
Who was?
John Ajadan.
I'm confused.
Yeah. So was I. Because he clearly isn't. He is just a guy. And I mean, he's literally owning and running a bakery. I think they're trying to set it up for a sequel where he kind of, you know, is a dog man. Oh, and then at the end it says, P.S. and we were human.
Ah. Oh. And how did they express that through the medium of 4D?
Well, I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? Because
it is tricky, you're right.
I'll tell you, well, one thing which I thought was weird is that at the start of the film, they came and gave us all a giant box of muffins each.
Oh, okay.
And then at the end of the film, when he opens the box of muffins, what you're probably thinking, Andy, is that we open the box and there's paper in there and we read it. No, what happens is the usher comes up and just opens our box and it is muffins, but they just are forced to eat them all really quickly in front of us so that they're gone really quickly. Yeah, and they have to eat about 12 each because it is a full box.
Oh, wow.
And it's really disgusting. And there's also no paper, you know, behind. It's just like, just the jump scare. Because the jump scare is that there's no muffins. So they have to really quickly show us that there's no muffins.
It has to be really quick, otherwise it's not scary. But we can't stress enough that you will not experience any of that because that won't be the theatrical release.
No.
So, Tim, this film is out next week. You guys now know everything about it, so you can decide whether you want to see it or not. Tim, what's it called?
It's called Barking Mad. Because, of course, they are an asylum, and wouldn't you be so angry if you got kidnapped? Yeah, and they are dogs, which is the barking bit. It was good. The finger,
Tim, spitting in the ears. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to give a summary. That's not how we do it on the show. If you're trying to explain how good it is, just give us, you know, a fat number of stars out of five.
Fat number of stars. I mean, it's the movie of the week, Andy.
Mm.
You have to remember that.
Oh, I remember.
And the fact that I didn't watch any other movies this week should not diminish this movie's place as movie of the week. It was, I guess, by default better, though, and it is therefore a 5-star movie.
Barking Mad in cinemas next week. If you want the ending spoiled, go right ahead and go see it. I hate spoilers, so I'm not going to. And we'll be back for another episode in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, more of these.
More of what?
The episodes. Thanks for listening. Andy?
Yeah.
I didn't want to... I just thought I should leave something for people. I don't spoil the entire film, but there is actually a post-credits scene.
What?
Yeah, there's a sixth jump scare.
No. You said there were five.
I did, and that was a deliberate mislead.
What's the sixth jump scare, Tim?
So, while you're sitting there, and maybe you're indoctrinated by the MCU, and you're thinking, oh, is there a post-credits scene? So you're sitting there anyway, you're waiting for something, seeing what happens. Sitting there, lying on your back, and covered in hair, and spit in your ear. A big box of half-eaten muffins on your lap. Just as the usher is finishing the muffins in front of you, and most of them were just sat on the floor, sort of being sick. And then you look up at the screen, credits roll, they finish, black screen, and then just in big white letters on the screen it says, "Look at your usher." And, you know, true to form, I did look down at the usher, and you'll never guess what I saw, Andy.
What did you see, Tim? It wasn't a dog, was it?
No. It was Usher. And every single usher, and there was about 40 people, 40 critics there. So 40 ushers, every single one of the ushers was just Usher.
And they will be doing that during the theatrical release.
Well, yes, because that's part of the reel. And I don't know why. That's just, you know, that's what it says in the film, is to look at your usher. And I don't, either they're changing that for something and the usher is gone, or it's, you know, your own father. But it should be something, and hopefully it'll just be Usher again, and you know, Usher and his 40 of him, you know, have something to do.
Well, it's good to see him getting work again.
All of them.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.